You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler, and this podcast also happens to be the first podcast of the season after the league has started. We've had the first six games in the Premiership. Lots to talk about, and helping me to do that, it's my friend, colleague, Joel Skead. Joel, how's it going?
Very well. Good weekend of football.
It certainly was. It was a very, very good weekend of football. And how did you get on this weekend? What were your activities?
I was out for the out and about for the Rangers game. So only caught the second half of caught with the first half on Y Scout, and then I was at Tynecastle on Saturday night. Didn't finish until nearly 2 a.m. So that impacted my Sunday viewing, but managed to go to the pub and watch the Hibs game. And I have since watched the St Johnstone game and the first hour, 65 minutes of the Aberdeen game.
Okay, I think you've watched more than me because I've only watched the highlights of the Ross County St Johnstone game. But I watched everything else. I was flagging a wee bit, like just having to watch so many games. So I watched three games on Saturday. I watched the Rangers game. I watched the Dundee St Mirren game, and then I watched the Hearts game at night, obviously. I had a few beers by that point, so my memory's a wee bit sketchy, but I can remember most of it. And then I watched the Aberdeen game for work. And then, yeah, by the time the Hibs game, I was watching it, but I was kind of looking at my phone quite a lot just because it was the fifth game I was watching that weekend. Found myself just drawn to anything else. But anyway, I think we've got it all covered. Instead of our usual on this show, where we talk through every game, instead, we're going to basically do an homage to A View from the Terrace, and we're basically just going to come out with 12 statements. It's only week one, but, and then tell you what we think on each side. But before we get to all that, here's a little break. The return of football is always worth celebrating, and Beer 52 are generously offering free beer while you watch your team from the comfort of your own home. Or if you just want a few to get you in the mood before you head down to the local ground, as we're now allowed back at the stadiums again. Yes! They're offering 8 craft beers sourced and created from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/terrace and just cover the $5.95 for postage. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members that they send a brand new case to each and every month. Every month's case has a different theme. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, all over the US and Europe. If dark beer is not your thing, you can simply choose the light option, and your case will come with an award-winning beer magazine, Ferment, and a tasty snack. Don't worry, though. If you change your mind, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. Just go to beer52.com/terrace to get your first case of 8 beers for $5.95. That's beer52.com/terrace. Right, Joe. I don't think we have to do this in any particular order, so just let's just fire out who you want to talk about first. Who's your first? It's only week one, but
since we always leave no nos to last, I'll bring that to the start.
So, okay,
it's only week one, but nil is going to be the most common number beside Ross County's name this season.
Yes, like I said, this is a game that I didn't watch, but I have seen the highlights, and I thought Ross County were in trouble when I saw one of the only few highlights that they appeared in the 4 minute 20 seconds on SPFL YouTube was a Regan Charles Cook cross narrowly missing Conor Randall at the back post. I was like, that's not good.
I can't remember that at all.
Well, it wasn't really much a highlight. I think that also told the story as well.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where you said, okay, that's you don't even make note of, but they did have a shot on target. That's that's a big takeaway from that game. It was a very foully game. In the aftermath, Malcolm Mackay has talked about wanting to add three more to his squad. I think it's down to two now because I think it's Harry Clark has signed from Arsenal to give them another centre-back option, but their squad is very light. I think they've lost 15 bodies. I think it's been supplemented by a few youngsters and a few players on loan. But one thing's clear, they need more attacking impetus. They lined up in a 3-5-2 with Regan Charles Cook and Conor Randall as your wing-backs already. I think when you see that as a lineup, you're thinking, oh, they're in trouble. Spittle and Callahan, they played in advance off Tilson, and both of them will provide will work and provide a bit of verticality just with a run, and you've seen that one moment. Potentially County's best moment of the game was when Callahan made a great run in behind the Saints' defence, and I'm trying to think who played. Oh, it was Cole Donaldson stepping out of defence, played a great pass to slide them in. And it was Callan kind of cross shot with Dominic Samuel, who showed flashes at the back post. But the striker, all he had to do was he would slide in and he scores, and he doesn't. And you're thinking to have strikers who got Ollie Shaw, who came off the bench, who probably aren't going to score double figures. They should score double figures between them, but they just seem to lack any sort of verve in the attacking third. Harry Payton came off the bench, and last season had a reservation about Payton, is that I think he's a good player, just doesn't put up the numbers or has that killer instinct in the final third. And he's seen that there was one moment where he was playing in the left-hand side of the box and he kind of turned away from goal and he eventually just won a free kick. They signed Alex Robertson from Man City, but reading him, there's lots of interest and stuff. He seems like an all-action midfielder by what Mackay was describing, even though he's got the number 11, just because he's talked about his work rate and stuff. But he's also said he's been tracking him for 4 years. And I was thinking, why the fuck have you been tracking him for 4 years when you've been a performance director at, or whatever his job title is at the Scotland national team? But it turns out Robertson can play for Australia, England, Scotland, and Peru. I think he's 18 years old, but he was left on the bench. So they're at the moment, I mean, just coming in the season, there's worrying concerns for Ross County, just the nature of their summer, the way that Kai was brought in, Hughes left, and then the squad build is Mackay actually said that it's going to be a bumpy few weeks in the transfer window, and that's concerning considering how important the next few weeks are going to be for Ross County in the transfer window, because you compare them to teams around them. I think Motherwell will probably score goals. Livingston at least have Bruce Anderson, and they got goals from midfield. Who else? Dundee United got Shankland at least, and who's the other team that I wasn't particularly enamoured by? Yeah, so they've kind of got goals between them. I just can't see Ross County creating many chances. And then the chances do create, they've not got that killer, that poacher to score goals.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything much to add to that. Obviously, I didn't see the game, but also as well, like, it kind of just reminds me of a lot of stuff that myself and Craig Cairns were talking about when we were discussing County's season for the season preview for the Patreon. And if you'd like to listen to that episode and all our Patreons, it is patreon.com/terracepodcast. It's just the fact that the squad doesn't look very good. Like, you're bringing in a manager who, I mean, yeah, like, let's put all the kind of controversy to the side. You're bringing a manager who, on paper, maybe should be kind of elevating you as a club, because, I mean, he probably wouldn't be County manager if it wasn't for some of that kind of baggage that comes with him. I mean, he has obviously had chances in football after what he did at Cardiff, but he still would probably have, like, maybe other English clubs after him if it wasn't for his prior indiscretions, to put it very lightly. But you think, like, bringing somebody him in, if he can live up to his previous reputation as a boss, then County could be doing very well. But then you just looked at what they were kind of bringing in. I mean, the guys they're bringing in, I don't think they're necessarily that bad. It's just the fact that, like, so many players left, and it's just they've just not brought in enough. If they brought in as many players, like you say, Samuel looked like he maybe had something about him. Robertson looks like he maybe has something about him. I know that David Cancola has just passed quarantine, so he's now, I think they'd put photos up today of him with a shirt and looking all, you know, smiley, happy to be there. He looks like he's got something about him.
Give it time.
Yeah, he looks like he's got something about him as well, because I had a look at him on Y Scout. But so they seem to be bringing in guys who do look like maybe the necessary quality, but yeah, you're right. Like, they still need a lot more bodies, because it's quite clear that the guys who were there, and I thought they were quite lucky as well, kind of the makeup of the squad. I mean, I was actually quite big on the County squad earlier in the campaign, but once kind of Ross Stewart left, and then you kind of, some guys were getting a bit older and some guys were out of form. Towards the end of the campaign, I kind of thought that they're going to be lucky to stay up. But I think Hughes ended up doing a decent enough job. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting few weeks left for County. If they can continue bringing guys on that kind of level of the guys they've brought in already, I think they might actually be all right, but they really have to get this nailed on.
So just before we move on, what is, I think Mackay, as he's talked about it recently, is that I think he's quite keen to just loan players from the English Premier League teams. But can Cancola, what type of midfielder is he?
He's, this will be something as well, because when I looked up, because I was very big on him when I spoke to Tony, when we'd done our 14 questions to preview the season. I thought he was somebody that looked pretty decent, but then I kind of realised that a lot of what he looked good at like defensive midfield, like, so, like, for instance, he's somebody that's quite combative, but he kind of falls short of being quite as combative as a normal defensive midfielder. And he's a good ball player. He's very good at passing the ball and passing the ball forward. He's not somebody who just plays it side to side, but he maybe lacks some of the other attributes that would make him a good number eight. So he also fouls a lot. So then I was thinking, is this just Ian Vigers? But he comes from like a higher, like, well, he comes from a decent standard, like played in the Austrian top flight. And then I think he went Slobin Liberec and failed to break into their team. But we know that Slobin Liberec, if they were to play most Scottish top flight teams in Europe, would probably, you know, beat everybody other than the top four or something. So he's coming from a decent standard. I think he'll be a decent player for County. So yeah, it's just a bit a case of bringing more guys like that in. But aye, like I was just basically what I started off with, like Regan Charles Crook crossing to Colorado. So you have to improve. You have to improve or you're going down. Right, I'll go next. Okay, let me look at this. Our list of, what would I want? Right, here we go. Dundee United. It's only been week one, but Tam Courts' Dundee United look awfully like Mickey Mellon's Dundee United. I have to say, like...
Yeah.
Like, going into the weekend, United were one of the clubs that I was most intrigued by, and I think a lot of people were intrigued by, because we've heard a lot about what they've got plans for the club in terms of concentrating on coaching, in terms of talking a lot about how they plan to. I mean, they've only made two signings, so they're really hoping to bring on a lot of these kind of younger players. And also as well, I know that Tony Ashgar was in a Q&A with the fans, and he said, one of the things he said was that they weren't happy with the style of football last season, same the way the fans are. So I'm going into this Aberdeen game thinking, right, here's going to be Tam Courts with his expansive brand of football, playing all these young kids who he's coached up to the max. Let's see how this is going to work, because it is going to be a success or disaster. And it was just like watching Mickey Mellon's team. I mean, they started out the first like 25, well, until Aberdeen scored. It was basically like a 5-4-1.
You know what they set up like? They said that those first 25 minutes, they set up like a League One or League Two team playing Aberdeen at Pittodrie in the Cup.
Yeah. Two banks, one of five, one of four, Shankland on his own, with nobody anywhere near him.
No player engaging the ball high up the pitch. So it was like they were waiting for Aberdeen to get into the final third of the pitch, even just over the halfway line.
Yeah. And yeah, barely touched the ball, barely had any possession in Aberdeen's half. The only time they actually looked threatening before Aberdeen scored was twice the Aberdeen defence looked a bit dodgy. Considine, and there was one time Considine, I think McCrory got in a wee mix-up, another time Considine was played a very poor pass and almost got caught. But other than that, they really showed nothing. The only thing I could really say for them, and this is maybe true of the entire game, was that Aberdeen didn't create a lot of chances for their possession. So maybe the defence does look maybe improved. But then again, Aberdeen were playing on 3 days rest, having played Hacken away from home in midweek. So if you want to catch Aberdeen at any time, this is kind of a good time to catch them. And yet, they looked good for that 50 minutes before half time when they kind of came out a bit more. But second half, it was more of the same. Aberdeen just completely controlled possession, penned them back, got the second goal. And from that point forward, United never really looked like getting back in the game at all.
So with United, I have my concerns about just how good this batch of youngsters are, whether they are good enough to be hoisted on the pedestal that they seem to be, trying. I just don't know if they are the quality that they are of the quality that you'd want to rely on in the Premiership. And then secondly, if I was Lauren Shankland, I'd be getting out of Tannadice as quickly as fucking possible, because it was just so isolated up there. He had a really poor game, poor game. There was a couple of times where he just, two times he just passed the ball out the pitch. But he's just looking a shell of the player he is, just because of the nature of how United is set up. The first goal, the sheer problems that United had throughout the team is that I think Shankland went to press the defence. Defence shifted it. I think it might have been McCrory shifted it to Ferguson. Shankland turned around and seeing that there was no Dundee United player within 15, 20 yards of him, he gave it that kind of exasperated gesture.
Drop the shoulders.
Yes. And then Ferguson looked up, clipped the ball over the top for Johnny Hayes, and you think, oh, Johnny Hayes a mile offside. Nope, that's because who was it that was playing? I think it might have been Edwards was playing them 5 yards on, playing them 5 yards onside.
Sigrid should have came out for that as well.
Yeah, he was pretty deep. So yeah, there's
but even like with the ball, how have you not got that? Like, I just kept expecting, because I had Johnny Hayes as my captain, my fantasy team. I had originally had Hedges. I originally had Kamar Roof, and then he was on the bench for Rangers. So I shunted up the bench and picked him a super sub. But yeah, I had Hedges, and then found that he was a player, so switched my captain to John Hayes. So I was like, so when Hayes got put through, I was like, go on. And I was like, ah, it's too far. Hang on. Why is the goalie not coming? Where's the goalie? And he eventually gets there. And I wonder whether it was going to actually get given as an own goal, because it's kind of hard to tell. I wonder whether Hayes is... I always thought that Sigrid helped it in the back of the net.
Yeah, I didn't see can't remember seeing a good angle to judge that on, but it doesn't seem like we have a goals panel in Scotland. Just like if ask for a goal and yeah, it's yours.
Right, let's move on. Who do you want to talk about next?
Let's go for the Gorgie boys. I originally had a negative and a positive. but I'll because
the negative being that we were actually shite on Saturday.
Kind of, yeah. It was the fact that negative was the fact that we saw the concerns about playing a 3-4-3. I mean, the Hearts fans have a concern about Nielsen and conservatism anyway. And then you've seen the downfall of the 3-4-3 when you have essentially two defenders playing as the wing backs. They just drop and it goes from 3-4-3 into a 5-4-1. I was looking at the Y-Scout today. Only it was weird. Hearts committed four fouls against Celtic. I meant to look it up the last time. They conceded so few, and the fact that the Y-Scout have a metric PPDA, it's like passes per defensive action, and the higher the number is, it means that the lower the number is, it means the team have put more pressure on the opposition. However, only Livingston allowed the opposition to have more passes per defensive action than Hearts. But positive. John Souter is going to be a Player of the Year candidate.
Until he suffers a devastating injury in January.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is always a concern. But speaking of him on Saturday after the game and seeing him like up close, noticed a couple of times when covering Hearts games, and you see Souter up close, he looks bigger, more robust than ever before. And he talked about it after the game and says that as soon as he got injured, basically the sports scientist was like, right, this is where we want to get, like, weight we want to get you to. This is like the body shape we want to get you to. He said it's had a massive difference. He said he's in a position where no longer gets bullied. And you can see that in the way he's really aggressive in the air, on the ground. He's really combative. I think the 3-4-3 really works for him, because we spoke to Ryan Poitras for an interview, which you can get on patreon.com/terracepodcast. I feel like Jonathan Wilson trying to get a punt for one of his books in a Gardener article he writes. That he talked about playing in a three, how when he plays a central, that it's he doesn't get on the ball as much, because it's the two players on the that play on the side get on the ball and able to pass it. That suits Souter down to T coming out, seeing it with the opening goal. He played the ball into Ginelli. But the one of the reasons I said Player of the Year candidate, because as we've seen in the past with these Player of the Year awards, folk love a story. They love a narrative. And with Souter as well, coming back from such a devastating injury, he says he's in the best shape of his life. I really do. Like, as soon as he came in last season, back into, I think he played the last four or five games, he didn't look like he'd been away for so long. And he's just continued that into this season. He looks so strong. Just looks like a better defender, a more rounded defender. I already think he's going to be Player of the Season for Hearts. And if we are up the top, the upper echelons of the league, I think he'll be a key reason why. And I can see him potentially being in the conversation for it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are going to bristle at that, because he's never really shown that kind of level before. He's also been injured a lot, and it's two Hearts fans talking. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of eye rolling among our listeners.
Obviously.
And when I first saw it written down as well, when you sent me it, I was like, you're getting far too carried away. Like, in the first episode, like in the pilot of A View for the Terrace, when you said Hearts were going to challenge for the title that season.
Got to November.
Get to November. We're top of the league until then. But let's not talk about the rest of the season or anything else that's really happened since. I was a bit kind of, I was a wee bit eye-rolling myself. But then you're kind of right. You make a very good point about the three at the back. You make two good points. The second one is something I didn't think of, which was, he's got a great narrative, and you always, well, award stuff you do. Everybody loves a kind of good narrative, and Souter's horrendous injury history. The fact that he was a Scottish international is now kind of so far out of the picture for that. Guy kind of wanted by clubs in England, and that seems a long way away as well. But if he is, and he's not shown any signs, I mean, as you say, it looks like he's actually come back better for it. And if he shows, and I was talking to Graham Spears, I was on his podcast that weekend doing a Q&A ahead of the new season, and somebody asked if if Suter was going to end up like Levine, where a lot of his talent would be taken away by his injuries. But I was like, well, Levine, firstly, it was 80s. And secondly, he suffered like two consecutive. Well, I suppose Suter did as well with Achilles, but I don't think it's quite the same. But in the 80s and even like into the 90s, we can all remember, usually a player suffering a knee ligament damage was like a career, just a bit like a, if not a career ender, then a career ruiner, like, because it used to rob everybody of pace. Like, players wouldn't be the same. There's so much more advancements now that Suter is kind of going to benefit from that, despite having all these injuries. And also, as well, like, he's not somebody that's really relied on his athleticism as much. He's always been about playing with the ball, and that comes, that leads me to your other point about him playing at the three at the back. That is really going to suit him down to the ground. That's going to make his, that aspect of his game stand out, and that's the surefire way to kind of make yourself, if he's going to be a player, your candidate at a club like Hearts, who I think we still reckon fifth at this point in time is probably still about the best they can hope for. So they're not going to be that exciting a team. But if he can stand out by being this kind of great ball player in centre half and be really interesting to watch by himself, and he definitely could be, we know he has that talent, then I think you're actually right. He could make it. I still think it's a bit of a long shot, but I can see there's method in your madness.
When he said that, he talked about getting carried away, someone tweeted me over the weekend, and I think the tweet was exactly, not like you to get carried away, and which kind of, which is fair enough, because I look back on it, I can't remember what he was referring to. It could mean any number of things, so there you go.
Right, next up. It's only been week one, but Dundee's Premiership new boys will be fine with a step up. I was quite... I watched their
looked handy against the men.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, a number of guys who had question marks coming out of this campaign. Like, guys like Lee Ashcroft's not played in the top flight for years. Jason Cummins has only had a small spell in the top flight. Killian Sheridan wasn't exactly... I mean, he was a decent enough player before when he was in Scotland, but he wasn't exactly incredible. And he's now in his 30s. There was also guys like...
Paul McMullen.
Did I mention Jordan Marshall as well? Jordan Marshall. And there's probably one or two others I'm forgetting for the weekend that I thought looked pretty good. And
Max Anderson.
Oh yeah, until his red card. It's wild.
You could see what he was trying to do, but the execution of it was just absolutely appalling.
Yes, it just got far too carried away. Too much adrenaline pumping through him at that moment, clearly. Yeah, they all look pretty good. And I mean, this is a St Mirren team as well. You can look at it and say, okay, but they're only playing St Mirren. They're not playing, you know, Hearts, Aberdeen, or Rangers, or Celtic, or whatever. But St Mirren are probably going to be a decent team this season. I'd be not wholly surprised, but it's the Scottish Premiership. You could never really be surprised by anything other than one of Rangers or Celtic winning the league. But I would be fairly surprised if St Mirren don't finish at least in the top seven. Like, I think that they've got a foundation, a decent manager, and looking at their squad, that they're certainly capable of that. And they played pretty well themselves. I mean, twice took the lead. And there's an aspect of them I'll come on to talk about later. But they were, you know, they were a tough side to face in their first game. And Dundee played pretty well. I think matched them for a lot of periods. It was a really entertaining game. Then the red card happened and Dundee had to really shore things up. And they did. I think there was one very good chance that St Mirren had. But other than that, I think Dundee defended terrifically well. Lee Ashcroft was one of the best players in the park. And you're suddenly looking at it thinking, maybe McPaik wasn't that naive to kind of put his trust in these guys. It is one game and they might still be riding the crest of a wave. But it's certainly a good sign for the season ahead.
Yeah, so I spoke to, I messaged Gary Cocker on Friday night. Just, I can't remember what was regarding. Oh, I think I was writing something. But I wanted to just... ask his take on Dundee this season. What's the likely lineup? Then he sent me the what he thought was the best 11. Fair enough, it's decent. There's question marks around it, whether a lot of these players are going to step up. And then I seen the team on Saturday. Liam Fontaine had dropped out, and then it was a case of putting Jordan McGee to centre back, bringing others into midfield. And there was kind of alarm bells ringing, because you've seen McGee and Adam strike up a really good relationship in this pitch. Fontaine has been so key as a centre back, but yeah, they impressed me even just in the highlights. And then you talked about McPaik and the trust he's had in them. You also have to look at the trust and the Dundee hierarchy I've had in McPaik as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. That loyalty was almost surprising. And
yeah,
I think a guy Gary said himself, if it wasn't for the pandemic, McPaik probably would have been gone because there would have been a lot of pressure in terms of fans in the stadium. They would some of the disasters that we've seen, some of the comical disasters that we saw in the early part of the campaign for Dundee wouldn't have been tolerated as much if fans were allowed in. But he got the time and he managed to turn it around. And yeah, they're certainly looking bright. That was one thing I thought was a bit curious and maybe shows that he doesn't really have much faith in Liam Fontaine to make the step up. And I can certainly understand that why, considering these performances for County when he was last year and just his age as well. It's just, I think it's just at the time now where Liam Fontaine isn't on top flight centre half anymore. And he'll be very good for the dressing room. Now, I think he's always come across as somebody who'd be a really good teammate. And he'll provide decent enough cover. But I think we'll be looking for Ryan Sweeney to step in, and he came off the bench and looked very good. So I think maybe next game, Sweeney in the back four and McGee back into the centre of the park, and that should give them a bit more balance as well. So there's even reasons to be more optimistic. Maybe not. I mean, they're going to... Well, maybe they actually should be optimistic. They're away to Celtic next. If there's any time to play them. Right, let's move on.
Yes, I'll stick with Celtic. It's only week one, but Ange Postecoglou is going to have Celtic as a must-watch team. Celtic are obviously the box office club at the moment off the field, and I reckon they could be the box office club on the field. Watching them on... So watched them a couple of times now, watched them against Midtjylland, watched them obviously on Saturday. Postecoglou has a way of playing. I'm sure it'll take time to get spot on, just with the in terms of the personnel he has and the fact that Celtic need a massive overhaul. We'll talk about them needing to get results. It's like, yes, they always have to get results at Celtic, but there has to be a understanding of the position Celtic are in at the moment. It's he has been dealt the shittest of hands, and it's going to take a lot of time to shovel up all the shit and get rid of it. They pop it about very well. I was quite impressed with the way they did against against Hearts. They've got two direct positive wingers. Unsure on Forrest playing on the left and Abada on the right, considering Abada's crossing looks really, really poor. Two centre midfielders want to get forward, but by God, they'll leave big gaps at the back. I thought Hearts were quite poor at times going forward. So, I mean, they got up in the counter-attacked well, but then they got into the final third and their decision-making was really poor. With the way the full-backs play, Celtic are going to leave a lot of gaps down the flanks, I think. And then Starfelt does no look comfortable running back to his back to his own goal when he gets turned again. First, he's only just arrived at the club. First game again in the Scottish Premiership, it was frenetic. It was really pulsating. So it might have just been like a kind of shock to the system. But I think they'll score goals. I also think they're just going to concede a lot of goals as well. So fun.
I just said that about Abada because. When I scouted him after he signed for an article for the Scotsman, he was somebody to me that looked like he wasn't really that interested in crossing. He just looked like he wanted to attack inside.
Yeah.
And I noticed that against Midtjylland as well, the way kept trying to go on the outside, even when the defender was showing him inside. And I'm like, what are you doing? This is kind of what your bread and butter is. I'm wondering if he's been asked to do that or he's just, I don't know, maybe he's just trying out something new. But if that's the case, you should stop it and just attack inside because, yeah, you're not very good going outside, mate.
Yeah, I think someone in the chat made a good point. And I think he is right-footed, but so he was playing on the right and all went down the side. Whereas if you just swapped him with Forrest, you had Forrest attacking the outside, which he does so well,
and then he can go in and out. Yeah,
yeah. But as we were, yeah, I think Celtic are going to be a lot of fun this season. I jokingly put in that it's only week one, but Postecoglou will have an altercation with a journalist at some point in the season, as in getting coming on from behind the desk to have words.
was there a, you don't have to name names, but was there anything close on Saturday?
No, I wasn't. Just because of the work I was doing, I was only covering heart stuff. I was only half listening to what he said, but it wasn't any anything that made my ears prick. So, but he does say, I'm sure he mentioned it in the media, the fan media event he did at, when he first arrived, that he can be quite grumpy. I'm sure he said, whether he used the word grumpy, I'm not sure, but he certainly kind of alluded to that. So, yeah, it's been amusing so far.
Right, it's only been week one, but Keith Von Ven, I think we're going with, is it? Is that the Sky Sports pronunciation? Keith Von Ven. Let's go with that. Keith Von Ven is going
Why do you keep calling him Keith as Kevin?
Oh, sorry. That's why. I was wondering why I was getting so confused. Yeah, sorry. Kevin Von Ven. Is it Von Ven? Is that it?
I wasn't listening to his sound. When I see it written down, I just think it's Keith Van Veen.
But
yeah. Keith, if there's a different pronunciation, then I'll need to learn that and forget it.
You should have said Keith there.
Did I just say Keith again? Because the stuff you sent me has got Keith written down. It's Kevin Van Veen. That's when I've seen it. It's I've always just assumed it's Kevin Van Veen. But I was watching the game in the pub, so I didn't hear what the commentator said.
Okay, let me start that again. It's only week one, but Kevin. I'm just going to call him Van Veen. Kevin Van Veen is going to be worth the ticket price alone this season. So yeah, you have compared him to Harry Kane. I kind of get that, but
yes, before you get onto yours, I was watching it for about 10 minutes. Like, and he reminds me of someone. He reminds me of a striker, and I just clicked. And it was Harry Kane. Just the way he takes the ball in, the way he shifts it, the way he controls it, just the way he moves. He just reminds me of the England striker.
You can also see why he's been compared to Dennis Bergkamp as well. And I know this sounds wild to anybody listening, but it's just like, obviously a very, 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 very discount version of these players.
Yes.
But you can see as well, because he does move, like the way he moves with the ball, the way he just moves in general, like when you see his head up all the time, like that kind of perfect posture for a footballer as he's kind of running with the ball. You see, and yeah, he was excellent against Hibs. Mm-hmm. I think we thought coming in that he had real kind of cult hero potential, but I certainly wasn't quite prepared for the showing he had against the Hibs. I mean, I did see a comment from a Motherwell fan. I don't know whether it was just this guy being so overly negative, because, I mean, it wouldn't be like Scottish football fans to be that, but he did wonder whether this was going to be a case of Hibs were taken by surprise, and for future games, especially against teams that might not fancy themselves good enough to just leave them one-on-one with a defender and just trust their defender to do the job, they might start to double up on them. And that'll be interesting to see if that does happen, whether they can adapt it. But I hope it's not the case that it impacts for his game. I hope that literally every single game he plays is as good as this one, because it was an entertaining match in general, but he really kind of helped it take it up a notch as well.
Yeah, I just saw it was just the way he plays. He's so smooth, and he entices defenders to come out. When he's seen that in the second half, when he eventually won a corner, but skipped past, I think it was McGinn and Poitras. Gave Poitras a really, really hard time. It's really encouraging for Motherwell, because that was one of the key positions where you worried for them. Just that Defante Cole had left, but they seem to have. Seem to have recruited well, and yeah, he's already going to be one of my favourite players to watch this season.
And he looks like the kind of perfect player for that team as well. Somebody that he scored, but it's not really about him really scoring goals, I think, on this side. I think he kind of has to play the role we kind of saw him playing, like a playmaking, like almost like a false nine. What was it called? what was it they call Hurricane, a 9.5 or something?
9.5,
so, yeah. Yeah, so kind of that kind of player, and just kind of hope that the guys around him can chip in enough that, I mean, I thought he'll score a decent amount himself, but he's, I don't think his game's going to be a lot focused around bringing others into play, and I think that's perfect because that's kind of what Motherwell need with the kind of shape of their squad. Mm-hmm. And I think once they get Connor Shields fit and available on the right side of the attack as well, I think that'll really help them. Having looked terrible in the in the Premier Sports Cup games, I think Motherwell fans can rest a lot easier that their team's not going to be as bad as they looked against Queen's Park and against Airdrie this league campaign. And Slatterly does look like a decent acquisition in the midfield as well. They could still probably do bolster in that defence, but they do have their latest signing to still come into the team. So that'll maybe help matters. But overall, a very kind of, even though they lost and even though they conceded 3 goals at home, neither of which are ideal, I still think Motherwell don't think they're going to trouble the top six too much. But I no longer look at them as possible relegation contenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Right. I'm sorry I've took you away. Caused you pause there. Go ahead.
It's only week one, but if I were a Dons fan, I'd be very excited.
Yes. Several aspects of this team.
Noted down a number of reasons why.
They're good to watch. They're two young fullbacks. Yep. Daniel Thomas is a number 10. Yep. Scott Brown, kind of being a good leader of the side. Christian Ramirez. Lewis Ferguson's been in the excellent form so far. What's not to love?
So I went new manager, two cult hero centre forwards, two pricks in midfield that you'd love to have in your team but hate playing against, two really promising fullbacks, some positive football, but also the rebirth of Funzo Oyo.
Oh yeah, how can I forget about that? Yeah, he took a bit of sword later on. Hopefully he's all right, because I don't want his momentum to be ended. I want to see Funzo looking like the player he was supposed to be, because he came in with, I mean, he came in for England's League One, but I think he was quite highly thought of, and obviously Hibs wanted him as well. And it's never really worked for him at Aberdeen, and it's always been almost perplexing as to how he's been so bad, having been a player who I thought looked pretty good prior to him coming in. And we're kind of finally starting to see that player, although in a different manner than what I assumed. I didn't think I'd be seeing him really start to contribute as a kind of box-to-box, energetic, wide midfielder. But here we are.
Yeah, he was. I forgot to note it down. But there was one moment where he was. There was just one moment that really stood out for him, just as what he added, the capacity he added to that midfield. But yeah, it must be good to be a Dons fan at the moment, just because of the suffering. I mean, they've still performed pretty well league wise, but had to suffer a lot of performances. And you talked about, when we were talking about Dundee United and Tony Ashgar meeting fans and wanting to enjoy their football a bit more, that's been very much the case at Aberdeen. I think that was a big thing for Dave Cormack, was to bring someone who would look to play positive football. And yeah, it seems to be working. Ramirez as well, so you've brilliant, obviously scored, but a brilliant moment where he was running towards the byline and then he backheeled it through the legs of a United player to Hayes or Oyo, certainly to a teammate anyway. They've got a new song for Ramirez, which is really, really catchy. an ABBA day band. Calvin Ramsey looks brilliant.
Yeah. He really looks a really top prospect. Somebody whose crossing has been, that's been the main aspect. So he's now, I've seen him play in two games and he's had an assist in both of them with terrific balls in the penalty box. And the dummy sold Reynolds.
Was just incredible, perfect.
And looks such a great attacking fullback. And him and Nathan Patterson coming through at the same time really kind of should be exciting for a Scotland fan that we're actually going to have a half decent right back soon enough.
Big time. And mentioned about Celtic and the way that Postecoglou plays his fullbacks, playing them, they have to get on the ball and centre the pitch. Like Ramsey, same with Patterson. He just looks like a really, really good footballer who could play in different positions. So yeah, it's exciting time to be Aberdeen fan. Obviously, unsure about the depth in the team and how everybody else fits in. But no, it's been relatively impressed from the two games I have seen of them so far.
Right, it's only been week one, but Eamon Brophy and Curtis Mayne are going to be a cracking strike partnership.
Yeah, that's the goal is just everything you want from a little and large duo. The first goal, Brophy, just so aware of what Mayne's going to do. He's like, he gambles, he makes a run as if to, he doesn't wait for Mayne to win it. He just assumes that Mayne's going to win it. And it's frustrating when you do see a front pairing for no matter any team and they play miles apart from each other.
That's actually more common nowadays in football than guys who actually seem to link up all the time. Yeah. I don't know if it's just because they're not used to it or they think that because the game's moved on, they maybe don't have to do it. But whenever you see strike partnerships, often I find that they don't fit together well at all. But these guys look like they certainly do.
Yeah, they look like they're on the same page. Mayne looks looks trim. He looks like
he does.
He looks
I don't know
like
if the haircut makes him look even more trim, but it certainly like he looks kind of rejuvenated. Looks like a new man, a different man, a Paisley man.
Scores 20 goals.
Curtis Miami doing damage. Yeah, I think they hooked up again in the first half as well. Maybe no disappointment is maybe they didn't create trouble the Dundee defence a bit as much in the second. But yeah, to talk about him coming in and them striking up the new kind of partnership, it's kind of what you're wanting as a Mayne fan. And also as well, talk about Mayne looking rejuvenated. Brophy after what must have been a really frustrating season from last year, they struggled to get back in the Killie team after the start of the campaign, went to St Mirren in January, suffered an injury, didn't really get going at all. Campaign was almost a bit of a write-off for him. And I mean, I know he's never going to get back to this level, or it's very doubtful that he will, but I mean, you know, you're talking about not long ago, he was playing for Scotland, so yeah, it was quite the fall for him. And you did wonder, coming into this campaign, if he doesn't get off to a great start, is he going to just kind of slide into a complete kind of irrelevance? But certainly, he looked sharp, his strike partner looked sharp, so Mayne looked pretty decent in general. And yeah, I'm looking forward to them hooking up a bit more in the coming weeks. Right, Joel, I think we've got one left each?
I've got two. We've got two left each.
Okay, you go first and I'll try to figure out what my second one is.
It is only week one, but St Johnstone have the best defence outside Rangers.
Let me think. I'm going to go for that. Yeah, they'll all be sold by this month, but still.
Yeah, and enjoy it while you can. But we obviously talked about Ross County early on. No, they weren't helped by the fact that they were coming up against McCart, Kerr, Gordon, protecting Clark, and you got Sean Rooney and Rhys Devine. Played, I think he's signed on loan for Man United. He looks really good. Looks like certainly they've not done they've not lowered the quality from Scott Tanzer. So I think they've got again two left backs who will be very competitive. He's slightly different to Rooney. I think he looks more like a McNamara type on the left side.
Danny McNamara, not Jackie.
Danny McNamara, yeah, he gives me those vibes. He looks, he does look like a wing back rather than just simply a fullback, which is which helps playing in this formation for St Johnstone, where the wing backs are key, getting forward, but also getting crosses in the box. He grew into the game and he puts himself about as well. So he seems to have started really strongly. Back three. Not a lot you can add to it. They just balance each other so well. Jamie McCart again was, he'd probably be my man of the match. Thought he was excellent. Always been a big fan of him since he moves to St Johnstone. So they will be a very, very difficult side to break down, especially when you get it screened by Murray Davison. He had another great game just breaking up play. Ross County, they did go long to White and Samuel every now and then. He would always kind of be on their toes, snapping into challenges. So yeah, they are St Johnstone still interesting going forward. It'd be interesting to see what Davidson does going forward, because they had Hendry and O'Halloran starting, which was with Kane and Mayne or May on the bench. I don't know if that was to do with Europe in mind, giving them a shot, and they are signing the Finnish boy. His name escapes me. So I think there'll be, I think Davidson might be working a few things in the final third, but just a continuation of last season in the defensive third.
Yeah, and it's going to be key for them to hold on to some of these guys. I wonder, I think that Europe's going to play a massive part in it. Because what's the point in, well, they'll play a massive part on two fronts. They'll either go, but they'll go for more money. Mm. Because clubs will know that St. Johnstone don't have to sell them. They can just let the contract run out. Or they might even convince one of them to stick around if it's a club in Europe and a club on the up. I mean, that seems always seems doubtful because usually players just want to go, but you never know. And the other factor is that if they, I've just alluded to that, the other factor is that they don't have to. Like, they can just say, if nobody's willing to come in with more than 300,000 for Rooney or 400,000 for Kerr, if you manage to make it into the, I mean, make it into the Europa League group stages, probably quite fanciful. But they've got an outside chance of getting it to the Europa Conference League group stages, and if they do that, they're guaranteed a few million. So, and it could be really exciting, and that'd be one of the reasons, and I think that's what St. Johnstone fans would probably want more than anything, is just to keep this kind of special unit together, because, I mean, teams like this don't come along very often, and it's certainly a really, really strong group. And yeah, the back three, the back five in general, is just like, for a club of St. Johnstone's size, is ridiculously strong, and you just want to see them play together as much as possible, and hopefully that lasts beyond August.
I've just got a picture of is Steve Brown's the chairman
owner? Yeah.
Of just him. Steve Brown. Of him just cackling away at the potential like 3 million from Conference League fans, like invest in the team, and he's like, no, and another cemetery, another car park.
It's a crematorium.
It's a crematorium. Let me branch out.
Nah, I could get a cemetery as well. We could get the whole thing going. Well, no, I suppose it's the, you wouldn't need to bury. You didn't bury ashes in a cemetery. But you could give them the option.
There you go.
We can either go there or they can go in the
stadium of death.
Yourself. Where your hopes for 3 points come to die. Hurts. There you go. Stick that there, yeah. Stick that on the side of the stand. Right, yeah, I figured out what my other one was. I'll leave that one for my last pick, and I will go to my second last, which was, Livingston are still going to be a tough out this season, even if they aren't any good. So after week one, still undecided whether they're actually going to be a good team in this league and whether they're going to be able to, because really against Rangers, they didn't, and I know it's away to Rangers, so it's really hard to take anything from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still quite disappointed with how little they did in attack. And, like, Bruce Anderson running about up front, barely able to hold on to the ball. Like, they were just, they really had any kind of periods of any sort of possession or, I mean, definitely no kind of any pressure. They never looked like scoring. But where it kind of comes from, where my kind of prediction comes from, is that I still thought they'd done very well to limit the amount of chances Rangers had over the game. I mean, I know Rangers piled it on near the end, scored twice, and maybe could have had a couple more to really kind of make it embarrassing. But that was after Livingston had gone down to 10 men, after an injury to Kabaya, after they made all three subs. So that was when the floodgates really kind of started to open late on. Until then, they never looked like they were going to do anything in the game, but they were still, you know, in it. They were still only a goal down. And I could still see them being a very disciplined, organised side, maybe playing above the sum of their parts still, but that might not necessarily mean they're that good, because I still have a number of question marks about them going forward.
Yeah, like can't add much to that. They're just, it was a really hard game to judge them on. Just with the hard game to judge any team going to Rangers at Ibrox, just because the. Just the nature of Rangers' quality and the massive difference between the quality on both sides.
I think it shows you they're not going to get pumped a lot, even if it's very poor. Even if they finish bottom, I still don't think they'll get pumped a lot. I think they'll be a very competitive side.
Yeah, my thing with Livingston is that they're not going to be fun anymore. They're not going to be the Livingston that that added a different dimension to the Premiership. I do think that identity will cease this season, and they'll just be a run off the mill side.
Okay, what's your final one?
Final one. Oh, I've changed it. It is. It's only week one, but Jack Ross needs to let Hibs off the leash for them to succeed this season.
Interesting. After scoring 3 goals away from home.
Yeah, but when you actually look at it, it wasn't until he made the change of going, bringing Doidge on and going essentially 4-4-2.
And Jake Doyle Hayes as well, do not forget.
Yes, so he made
the difference maker.
he made positive changes, but you look at Hibs, and don't get me wrong, I think if Hibs played conservatively this season, they'll still do well. They probably still finish third, but I do. There's like grumblings from Hibs fans. I've spoken to quite a few who aren't quite sure about Jack Ross, not completely sold on him, and a lot of it comes down to the style of football, the fact that what I hear is very, I think Tony mentioned it on the preview podcast he did with Andy Harrow on patreon.com/terracepodcast that he kind of lumping him Jack Ross with Derek McInnes, that kind of style, and you've probably put Robbie Nielsen in there, whereas he talked a couple of weeks ago about wanting to bring in Mueller this summer, and he wants to add another striker, even if Nisbet was to stay. And you just look at it, so just say you've got another striker, Mueller, Nisbet, Doidge, Boyle, Scott Allen, Jamie Murphy, Daniel Mackay. He's got an attacking arsenal. He's got loads of attacking players. And you do think that against the likes of Motherwell, against the likes of Dundee United, Livingston, etc., that Hibs can be in a position where they can almost be gung-ho and almost say to a side, that's fine, we might concede, but we're going to outscore you. And they will, just because they have got so many great attacking players. You look at even in midfield, I think Gogic, I thought it was really poor against Motherwell. And it's got to the point now, you think maybe having him in there could be overkill, and you could get away with having Joe Newell and Jake Doyle-Hayes as a midfield pairing, or potentially Kyle McGuinness in there as well, who was, I thought, was excellent breaking the lines with his running. Jake Doyle-Hayes was superb off the bench. I just think there's a lot of attacking options, and it'd be a waste not to use them, and just almost trying to obliterate teams, especially when question marks over the Hibs defence, especially if Josh Doyle leaves.
Yeah, and with Jake Doyle-Hayes, I mean, he's not that Alex Gogic will still have his place in the squad, because Alex Gogic is a midfield destroyer. And
oh yeah, there'll be games where he'll be very useful.
Yes, and Doyle-Hayes is not that, but he can do for a lot of the games, for a lot of the quote-unquote run-of-the-mill games, he will be able to do a lot of what Gogic does in terms of breaking up play, but he's also somebody who's a much better footballer, like in terms of his passing. And he's just clearly more kind of talented with the ball at his feet. And that'll just make Hibs a kind of more rounded side. It might make them, might take up something a little bit away from them defensively. And there are obviously question marks over Hibs defensively, but I still think that there'd be a better kind of more rounded team with Doyle-Hayes in that position rather than Gogic. But obviously, as well, you're saying, if they do want to play a 4-4-2, again, they don't even have to play Doyle-Hayes. They've probably got the talents elsewhere. Like if they played McGuinness and Newell together, they could probably even do that as well. So yeah, it's an interesting point. I think Hibs fans would certainly like to see that from Ross, and it would certainly endear them to Hibs fans to be a bit more kind of gung-ho, because, I mean, rightly or wrongly, they do identify with our club as being a team that tries to play attractive attacking football. We've seen enough managers to say to contradict that, but yeah, they certainly like their team more, and they certainly take more pride in it when that's the case. So that's, Ross has his doubters, and that is something that could get so a lot of the doubters on side, is to just go for it a bit more.
Yeah, there's part of me that thinks that if you pay too much respect to the teams you're expected to be and play conservative. I take this, this is from a position as a Hearts fan watching us go to away teams and almost give teams far too much respect and play conservatively. And you just become bogged down and it becomes a struggle, whereas just go and have a go.
Yep, yep. Right, last, certainly not least, it's only week one, but the title race is already over.
Yeah. Well, one of mine is going to be Rangers will drop 4 points at home all season.
Yeah, go for that as well. I think they will drop more points this season, I think, after doing it last year. Well, it depends how long the run goes on for, because that'll make them, that'll be an incentive and that'll want them to do really well. But if they lose a game in the league fairly early on, I think they will drop a lot more points than last season and probably finish on something like high 80s, early 90s, which will still be more than enough to beat Celtic, because it's clear that Celtic, there's just going to be a lot of, there are signs there for Celtic that Postecoglou is going to make things okay in the end. But I think we all saw at the weekend, they're not ready yet. They've still got a ways to go until they are a team that you can rely on to beat the competition every week. Whereas Rangers, I mean, they just got it started in like, what was it, 6 minutes when Hadji scored? Like, it's really, and just the attack at Arsenal they've got when Kamar Roof could come off the bench and Morelos is nowhere to be seen because he's not out of quarantine yet. And yeah, it's just some of the guys. Scott Wright comes on, excellent in the second half.
I don't think they even use Cedric Itten, who Steven Gerrard said was the standout attacking player during pre-season.
Yeah, no, he sat on the bench for the entire game. So it's not. Sorry, Rangers fans, I really don't have anything else to add to your first of all. We'll say more interesting things about you in the future, I promise.
There was they brought Lundstrom. I thought one of the things I found was interesting, aside from Scott Wright, I think he could have a big role to play centrally as well, when they need a different dimension in there. But when they brought Lundstrom on and moved Stephen Davis, they moved him actually further up the pitch or to the right, and Davis was just continued popping the ball about with absolute ease. He was just a joy to watch.
Aye, mother. I've only really got three other suggestions. Fashion Sakala didn't have the best of league debuts, and maybe goes to what I was kind of concerned about him with his kind of skill at running in behind maybe won't translate as well to playing in a side like Rangers, who are going to dominate the ball and force the opposition back all the time. But yeah, that's about my only other football observation. The other one, Ryan Kent does not suit a beard, and Calvin Bassey's hair looks better.
I was actually Bassey's hair is very good, but I was impressed with him. But he was really good.
He was really good at getting forward. Really good. Really, yeah. There's a lot of energy about him. He gets up and down the wing very well. His crossing is pish.
Yes, he is. I think he would probably frustrate fans over a long period of time in the final third. He'd be very erratic. But no, he's certainly a player in there.
Right, that's it for us. Thank you very much for listening. We're away to record a Patreon where we're going to look at some of the kind of more interesting quotes from chairmen and managers over the weekend. If you'd like to listen to that, it's... I think I've forgotten the address. Do you remember the Patreon address, Joel? Neither of us could remember it. You're just going to have to find it yourself. That's a shame. Anyway, yes, thank you very much, and we'll be sure to catch you again soon. Goodbye for me.
Goodbye for me.
Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.